Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome back to Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle with SDSU Extension. It is the middle of summer and we have had some really hot temperatures lately, but here in South Dakota and the Midwest, we're definitely enjoying some cooler weather here the last couple of days. So with that hot weather, we've had some definitely drought conditions, but also some other, flooding happening in the state as well. So to talk about some of these weather events that we might not necessarily be able to monitor or manage ourselves is a crew from the USDA South Dakota Farm Service Agency. So we have two folks joining us today to help us talk through some of these disaster programs as well as any other things in the state. So I'm going to let Logan and Roger introduce themselves right now.
Okay, Taylor, thank you for having us. I'm Roger Chase. I'm the State Executive Director for the Farm Service Agency, just starting into my second year in this particular role. In my previous life, in my current life yet, I still am a cattle farmer in rural Beetle County, which is just outside of Huron. I farm with my oldest son and we raise cattle. We have a cow-calf operation as well as a small feeding operation. So yeah, we've seen all things considered with FSA this year statewide. There's areas of the state that are abundant with moisture, and we have areas of the state that are devastatingly dry. And so you don't have to travel too far to go from one extreme to the other. So Farm Service Agency has been particularly busy trying to service producers that are struggling with both ends of the spectrum as far as moisture, either too much or too little. But obviously livestock is an important part of our state economic vitality, and we want to really focus on some of the programs that would be available to South Dakota livestock producers. So that's my introduction.
Thanks for having me, Taylor. My name is Logan Kaufman. I am the disaster program chief here in the state of South Dakota, kind of oversee all things disaster program related for the state of South Dakota. So Roger and I are both located out of our state office here in Huron. I am a Huron native, so I've been in this area my whole life as well. So yeah, happy to join today and answer some of the questions.
Great. So let's get right into it. Like you said, some areas of the state are flooding. Others are devastatingly dry. Let's start with the dry conditions. And so we know the growing season starts in March, right? We have a lot of spring calvers up here in South Dakota. So even if you can get out and graze in March, it might be snow covered some years, but we didn't have a lot of snow cover this winter. And so that forage did have a really slow start. When we start looking at drought programs, when does that start and how soon can producers start contacting the office with any losses?
Well, you kind of hit on it, Taylor. There was very little to no snow anywhere in South Dakota over the last winter. And so that prolonged the grazing season. A lot of producers had cattle out on pastures all winter long. But basically what triggers it is we follow the drought monitor on a weekly basis. And for those counties and those areas of the state that has lack of rainfall, that continues to show as far as the growth or the expansion of the drought monitor throughout the fall, the winter, and into the spring. And so a lot of times we triggered right away this spring when those grazing conditions kind of hit. And so we watch the drought monitor. County disaster assistance is triggered off of the drought monitor on a weekly basis.
Okay. And what kind of, and does the inventory then start on March 1st as well? Or when does kind of those cattle inventory numbers come into play?
Yeah, so a lot of that is going to be dependent on the individual county, Taylor. Our grazing season for FSA purposes and program purposes under our livestock forage program for native and improved pastures runs from April 15th to October 15th. Okay. So as Roger mentioned, it is dependent on the U.S. Drought Monitor map, which comes out every Thursday. And for those counties to trigger for that livestock forage program, which is our drought grazing livestock program, they have to be D2 on that drought monitor for 4 consecutive weeks, or D2 for 7 out of 8 consecutive weeks, or D3 or D4 at any time during that grazing period. And so, depending on when that county per se triggers, that is when those cattle numbers become effective.
Okay.
As you and Roger both mentioned, we had some extremely dry counties early in the year, as early as March, April 15th. And so we had 15 or so counties trigger immediately that first day of that grazing period, April 15th. And so their grazing or livestock numbers would have been as of that April 15th timeframe. But we've had numerous counties trigger basically weekly since that April 15th date. So every county is a little bit different. And I guess what we would encourage producers to do is just contact their local FSA office. They do keep track of that on a local level, as do we here in the state office. But if producers are wanting to apply for that drought assistance program on their grazing acres, they need to contact their local FSA office.
Okay. So what other programs exist for drought-related issues with you guys?
Well, specifically on the livestock side, our ELAP, or Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybee and Farm-Raised Fish, is another one of our major programs when it comes to drought. Not so much on the grazing side of the aspect, because that's covered under our LFP program. But we do have livestock and feed transportation for counties that trigger similarly to the LFP program, so dependent on the drought monitor. And water transportation. So for producers who have dugouts or pastures that no longer have adequate water available, sources available, FSA, the ELAP program, does compensate producers on a per gallon rate to transport that water.
Okay. Is there any thing people have to do ahead of time, like document that forage was there, right? Like I know a lot of dugouts didn't fill back up after last year, but obviously some forage did grow back this spring. Like, does there have to be proof of that forage was there before they get paid back for hauling the water?
Documentation is very, very important, Taylor, in all aspects, as far as inventory of cattle, as well as gallons of water that you would haul, forage availability. A lot of our ELAP programs, that's one of the requirements, is there available forage there? There's no sense in trenching in a water line to a pasture that has no forage for cattle to eat once you get water there. So documentation, proof of conditions. We encourage people, everybody's got a cell phone anymore, take verifiable photos that is dated on that camera. We can go back and actually see what the conditions were at that time as far as available feedstuff. And then also, keep very good records of the hauling of water. Unfortunately, the only thing we can't reimburse for is the actual cost of the water, but the time and the mileage and the transportation cost, that can all be reimbursed, but we gotta have very, very good verifiable records.
And are the reimbursements, like you said, it's not exactly per gallon of water, but are those rates updated annually to keep into track with inflation and current cost of production?
Yeah, they are. The rates for all of our disaster programs, whether that be the livestock indemnity program for cattle death losses, LFP forage grazing rates, and then ELAP for water transportation, mileage rates for feed transportation, things like that. Those are all updated annually by our national level.
Great. Kind of switching gears, I guess, a little bit to maybe the LIP with the heat stress going on across several portions of the upper Midwest in the last week. People a lot of the times, whether it's feed those cattle on their own, have a custom feeding, for those kind of arrangements, and along back to the LFP and ELAP programs, I suppose working with your landlords or your owner operators is really important as well to make sure you have proof of ownership of those animals. Is there anything special that you guys need in the office to make sure that that program goes on correctly?
Again, verifiable inventories of whose cattle is on a particular lot. If you're the owner operator of a feedlot and all the cattle that are in that lot are yours, then it makes it really easy. There are a lot of feedlots that custom feed for a number of different producers. We have to remember that the payment goes to the actual owner of the livestock or the critter. So we have to make sure that whomever gets the payment is the actual owner of that livestock that's in that feedlot that perished. And so that's where the record keeping comes in very, very important for that feedlot operator, that if he's got four different people that he's feeding for, how many of these animals perished from this one producer one way or the other. So good records. We're encouraging people to take either a photo of the year tag or a brand or something that identifies that particular head of livestock. And that way we can make the payments correctly to the right people. And we just want to make sure that, it's a disaster. It is a tough situation to lose livestock under the conditions we've got. But by all means, the weather conditions, the heat, the humidity, the lack of airflow was very difficult on livestock over the last few weeks in South Dakota. And so we just got to be aware of that. And we want to make sure that we can somewhat limit the losses of some of these livestock owners in the state of South Dakota due to the death of livestock.
Yeah, more so probably than any other program is documentation. And so for the livestock indemnity program, we are going to need basically two sets of inventories. What your beginning inventory was, so what was in inventory on the day before or the day of the event, and then what was your death loss inventory. And as Roger stated, the best way to document that is pictures with a date, producer contemporaneous records. So if you have pen records or cattle log books, things like that. If you're using rendering services, get those receipts. All of that is considered verifiable documentation to turn in. The biggest thing, because we are talking about dead livestock in extreme heat, obviously the producer's first instinct is we need to do something and dispose of these animals sooner than later. Otherwise, it's going to be worse off. But we need to make sure that producers are adequately documenting those losses before they're disposing of those animals. Otherwise, there's possibility that the FSA would not be able to compensate on some of those losses. So the first thing, first and foremost, is make sure you're documenting those losses and what your inventories were.
And if it's a case, let's say, we have another heat event, are those treated as two separate events, or would it be continuous throughout like a certain month period of time?
Yeah, depending on how far apart they are, if you have 2, 3, 4 day stretch right in a row, that's going to be considered one event. But if we would have another one here, in a couple weeks late in August when we know it can get extremely hot as well, that would be a completely separate event than the one that we had in July.
Sounds good. And so they can be actively turning those in right away and then possibly filing another program or another event, right?
Yeah, it is a calendar year program, so as soon as you those losses are apparent to the producer, they should be and can be contacting our local office. And then producers ultimately have until March 1st of the subsequent year, so March 1st of 2027, to be able to timely file all losses that occurred in calendar year 2026.
Okay. And what do you guys do from a state perspective for outreach, to let people know, maybe they've never, worked with you guys, maybe they're a beginning producer, is there any type of things that you guys do to reach out for to let people know about these programs?
Well, we've been in contact with the state, South Dakota State Department of Agriculture. We've been visiting back and forth. They've got some of the information that they have to have as far as burying livestock or disposal of livestock. We've got the LIP program that, with all the county offices, feel free to reach out to get information and make sure that you get the information to them that they can file the potential claim at some point during the upcoming next few months up until March 1 of next year. But there is additional information that's going to be dispersed very soon that is coming from the national level that you'll be seeing basically from our communications and outreach individual, I'm sure sometime yet this week.
Okay. I would say every office, works, every county office works independently, the way it sounds, but all receives the same information from you guys.
That is correct. And if they don't know today, they will be able to get those resources and that information very soon.
All right, so let's switch gears a little bit more to the flood. Unfortunately, we can't grow grass without water, but we can't necessarily grow grass underwater either or utilize it. So are there just different wings of these same programs that can be used for some assistance in flooded areas or like Prevent Plant, for example? I know that's still one that possibly people might, have Prevent Plant early in the year, and then can they have use for a drought program another part of the year. Maybe you guys can comment on those as well.
Well, usually on a flooding situation, livestock producers aren't too concerned about it because they know that water is eventually going to go down or be utilized for drinking purposes. On the crop production side of it, obviously, we had very few limited acres across the state of South Dakota that were prevented plant this year, although we did have some that were prevented plant this year and
Okay.
in certain areas of the state. But, the prevented plant side of it is more of a crop insurance aspect of it. And so we work pretty closely with the crop insurance industry, as well as the certification of acres and stuff like that. So, as far as preventing plant, that's going to be more of a crop insurance issue rather than programs through FSA. But we've worked pretty closely with the crop adjusters and the crop insurance programs to where producers are pretty much aware of what the eligibility is and what some of the resources are available through preventing plant with crop insurance.
Yeah, the ELAP program that we discussed earlier, Taylor, does have some flooding provisions in it for flooded pastures per se, if that would be something or any damaged or destroyed feed that may have been washed away or destroyed from flooding. So yeah, some of the same disaster programs that we talked about for drought are also do have some provisions and eligibility in them for ELAP as or for flooding as well. For our producers that take our non-insured crop disaster assistance program or coverage, they would have some assistance under flood or drought for their production-based crops as well. So that is our program that, as Roger just kind of mentioned, is mirrors federal crop insurance for a lot of those crops, the forage-type crops that aren't covered under federal crop insurance. So. We do possibly, we do have some programs that do provide some assistance for flooding. Again, if you're a producer that has been affected by recent flooding, things of that, like I said, your best bet always is to contact your local FSA office and let them know what kind of damage you've had or you've suffered, and they can kind of point you in that right direction. The other thing, just any disaster conditions at all, regardless of which peril it is. We do have some really good tools on, farmers.gov or FSA.gov, where it's kind of like a questionnaire, where a producer can go on there and answer some questions, and that will kind of point them to what programs and what kind of assistance might be available for the type of loss that they suffered.
Okay. Yes, I did try one of those out this last week and thought it was very well done in terms of letting me know what resources, what inventory I needed to take. I liked the different options of pictures or receipts or things like that. And then, yeah, directed you right to your county office number. But is there a limit on the number of programs like someone might be able to qualify for in a single year or maximum receipts potentially, if they're hit by both, for example?
Not as far as the number of programs that a producer can apply for. I mean, there is no set limit on that. Some of our programs have what we call a payment limitation, which is a maximum dollar amount that they could receive under that specific program. But for the majority of our disaster programs, there is no payment limitation. But if you get to our NAP program or an ARC PLC or a CRP or something like that,
Farmers
there are
Bridge Assistance.
Our Farmers Bridge Assistance Program or ECAP, those programs do have what we call payment limitations, which is a cap on the amount of dollars that can be provided out.
Okay. Back to the where the payment goes, to the person owning the cattle. Same on the crop side. If you have current leases in hand in the office, right, it should go to the operator, for example. When we get to the CRP topic, how does that paperwork work in terms of, if they want to manage graze it or manage hay it, does that work with the owner or would it go through someone who might be, renting the rest of their crop ground? Do they automatically get contacted to possibly do something with the CRP or does that work differently?
On the CRP, it goes to the contract holder of the CRP contract, whether that is a livestock producer or if that is somebody that just has the CRP land, they can make arrangements with an individual to put it up for hay. There's not a one size fits all. It all depends upon how that gets utilized. Now, depending upon the level of drought is the ability to basically how much you can cut, what the payment rate would be. So each county may be a little bit different on that. So we really encourage people to contact your local FSA office to find out, number one, how many acres would be eligible to be hayed and what the payments would be. But that always is something that has to be worked out with the actual contract holder of the CRP contract.
Has there been any federal conditions that would override the county-based level and across the whole state, or is it kind of strictly county-based most of the time?
It's going to be county-based on the level of whatever is accordingly to the drought monitor. So basically, again, we follow that drought monitor, whatever level of drought that that county is facing or is in current drought conditions in that county. So that's basically, we follow the federal drought monitor, and that's basically how we determine what can be done for haying, grazing, on what level for CRP.
Going forward, since we're only in early August, do you guys see any emergency haying coming up in South Dakota or neighboring states that you've talked to as well?
Well, I think this drought is more expansive than what just South Dakota is. If you look at Nebraska, if you look at Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota is perhaps in a better moisture condition what some of those states are. So haying is going to be something that's very important and very popular. Where you're going to find the hay and how far it has to be trucked into those regions, it'll be a lot of competition looking for available feedstuff throughout the upper Midwest. And like I said, some areas of South Dakota, they're having some fairly good plentiful hay supplies. Obviously, they will be in a very good condition to sell hay to other areas of South Dakota that desperately need it. So we see that we're going to be competing for that feedstuff with our neighboring states rather than looking at those neighboring states to supply feed for us.
Right. I think about fall grazing as well, how lots of folks used to, I mean, maybe they still go down to Nebraska to graze, whether it's under irrigation or not, possibly, but the dry land grazers down there might be competing for that as well.
That is correct.
Anything else to add on any of the programs on either side?
No, I guess I'll just add one last plug. Roger spoke to it earlier. We have a numerous amount of programs that are ongoing right now. I mean, like you said, from all types of perils, whether that's drought, flood, anything related in between there. We have our SDRP, which is the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program, that is ending. The deadline is August 12th, which is next week. And that is a big one that a lot of producers have participated in. And we've seen a lot of action across the state. So there are a lot of programs going on that we do not want producers to miss out on. So contact your local office. Make sure you've done everything that you need to before those programs, deadlines pass. Because once they pass, typically we don't have very many options to provide late filed applications.
Okay. Good to know. So don't be afraid to walk into the local office. I always like to make a phone call ahead of time just to give them a heads up that I'm coming and they can at least have your file sitting on their desk. That's usually a friendly smile to in our office at least. But I really appreciate you guys taking the time to answer these questions. We will want to help everybody get as much support as they can, like you said, during these challenging times, whether it's dry conditions, heat conditions, or overly wet conditions. And all we can do is work together to get those numbers documented correctly, or ask the questions, stop in and start that paperwork today, so we're not in a rush when it comes into the next busy season, whether that's harvest or calving will be here before you know it too. So thank you guys again. I really appreciate it. Feel free to say, how would people contact you if they want to get more information on any of these programs?
Basically, you can reach through the local county office. They can forward our contact information directly to Logan or I. And I just want to emphasize and go along with what you just made the comments of, Taylor. Please call ahead, work with your local FSA office. They're here to help, but they're overwhelmed with a lot of different programs that they're trying to finalize on right now. So please give them a heads up that you're coming so they can have that file ready and any other information that you may need. But work with them closely. They're connected with where your county is and what your eligibility is per that county. But certainly, if they have any questions, they can forward those contact information to both Logan and I.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Roger. Thank you, Logan. This has been Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. And until next time, don't forget to eat beef.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ. Brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.